This is Audible.
Audible Inc. presents Social Engineering, The Art of Human Hacking. Written by Christopher Hadnagy. Narrated by A.T. Chandler. Foreword. Security is a puzzle with two sides. From the inside, we look for a sense of comfort and assurance. From the outside, thieves, hackers, and vandals are looking for gaps. Most of us believe our homes are safe until one day we find ourselves locked out. Suddenly, our perspective shifts and weaknesses are found. To completely understand any kind of security, it is essential to step outside of the fence. In essence, locking ourselves out and start looking for other ways in. The problem is that most of us are blinded to potential problems by our own confidence or our belief that strong locks, thick doors, a high-end security system, and a guard dog are more than enough to keep most people at bay. I'm not most people. In the last 10 years, I have pulled more cons and scams than anyone in history. I've beaten casinos, faked sports events, fixed auctions, talked people out of their dearest possessions, and walked right past seemingly unbeatable levels of security. I have made a living exposing the methods of thieves, liars, crooks, and con men on a hit TV show called The Real Hustle. If I'd been a real criminal, I would probably be rich, famous, or dead. Probably all three. I have used a lifetime of research into all forms of deception to teach the public just how vulnerable they really are. Each week, along with Alexis Conran, I pull real scams on real people who have no idea they're being ripped off. Using hidden cameras, we show the audience at home what is possible so they can recognize the same scam. This unusual career has resulted in a unique understanding of how criminals think. I've become a sheep in wolves' clothing. I've learned that no matter how impossible something might seem, there's almost always a clever, unexpected way to solve the problem. An example of this is when I offered to show how easy it would be to not only steal a woman's purse, but also to get her to tell me the PIN to her ATM or credit cards. The BBC didn't think it was possible to accomplish this. When we presented this as an item for The Real Hustle, the BBC commissioner wrote, "Will never happen," beside it and sent it back. We knew it was entirely possible because different versions of the same scam had been reported where victims of theft were talked into revealing their PINs in several clever scams around the UK. We took elements from different scams to illustrate exactly how someone might be duped into giving someone else complete access to their bank account. To prove our point, we set up the scam at a local cafe. The cafe was on the top floor of a mall on Oxford Street in London. It was relatively quiet as I sat at an empty table wearing a business suit. I placed my briefcase on the table and waited for a suitable victim. In a few moments, just such a victim arrived, with a friend, and sat at the table next to mine, placing her bag on the seat beside her. As was probably her habit, she pulled the seat close and kept her hand on the bag at all times. I needed to steal the entire bag, but with her hand resting on it and her friend sitting opposite, she was beginning to look like bad news. But after a few minutes, her friend left to find the restroom. The mark was alone, so I gave Alex and Jess the signal. Playing the part of a couple, Alex and Jess asked the mark if she would take a picture of them both. She was happy to do so. She removed her hand from her bag to take the camera and snap the picture of the happy couple. While distracted, I casually reached over, took her bag, and calmly locked it inside my briefcase. My victim was yet to notice the empty chair as Alex and Jess left the cafe. Once out of sight, Alex headed quickly for the parking garage. It didn't take long for her to realize her bag was gone. Instantly, she began to panic. She stood up and looked around, frantically. This was exactly what we were hoping for, so I asked her if she needed help. She started to ask me if I had seen anything. I told her I hadn't, but convinced her to sit down and think about what was in the bag. A phone, makeup, a little cash, and her credit cards. Bingo. I asked who she banked with, and then told her that I worked for that bank. What a stroke of luck! I reassured her that everything would be fine, but she would need to cancel her credit card right away. I called the quote-unquote help desk number, which was actually Alex, and handed my phone to her. She was hooked, and it was now up to Alex to reel her in. Alex was downstairs in the van. On the dashboard, a CD player was playing office noises we had downloaded from the internet. He kept the mark calm, strung her along, and then assured her that her card could easily be canceled out. To verify her identity, she needed to enter her PIN on the keypad of the phone she was using. My phone and my keypad. You can guess the rest. Once we had her PIN, I left her with her friend and headed for the door. If we were real thieves, we would have had access to her account via ATM withdrawals and chip and PIN purchases. Fortunately for her, it was just a TV show, and she was so happy when I came back to return her bag and tell her it was all a fake scam. She even thanked me for giving her bag back, to which I replied, "Don't thank me. I'm the one who stole it." No matter how secure a system is, there's always a way to break through. Often the human elements of the system are the easiest to manipulate and deceive. Creating a state of panic, using influence, manipulation tactics, or causing feelings of trust are all methods used to put a victim at ease. The scenario outlined here is an extreme example, but it shows that, with a little creativity, seemingly impossible scams can be pulled off. The first step in becoming more secure is simply conceding that a system is vulnerable and can be compromised. On the contrary, by believing a breach is impossible, a blindfold is placed over your eyes as you run full speed ahead. Social engineering is designed to provide you with invaluable insight into the methods used to break seemingly secure systems and expose the threats that exist in the largest vulnerability, the people. This book is not a guide for hackers. They already know how to break in and are finding new ways every day. Instead, Chris Hadnagy offers those inside the fence an opportunity to take a look from the other side, the dark side, as he exposes the thinking and methods of the world's most malicious hackers, conmen, and social engineers. Remember, those who build walls think differently than those who seek to go over, under, around, or through them. As I often tell my audiences, if you think you can't be conned, you're just the person I'd like to meet. Paul Wilson, October 2010. Preface and Acknowledgements. It was just a few years ago that I was sitting with my friend and mentor, Matty Aroney, deciding to launch www.social-engineer.org. The idea grew and grew until it became an amazing website supported by some truly brilliant people. It didn't take long to come up with the idea to put those years of research and experience down in the pages of a book. When I had the idea, I was met with overwhelming support. That said, some specific acknowledgments are very important to how this book became what it is today. From a very young age, I was always interested in manipulating people. Not in a bad way, but I found it interesting how many times I was able to obtain things or be in situations that would be unreal. One time, I was with a good friend and business associate at a tech conference at the Javits Center in New York City. A large corporation had rented FAO Schwartz for a private party. Of course, the party was by invitation only, and my friend and I were two small fish in a large pond. The party was for the CEOs and upper management of companies like HP, Microsoft, and the like. My friend said to me, "It would be really cool to get into that party." I simply responded, "Why can't we?" At that point, I thought to myself, "I know we can get in there if we just ask the right way." So I approached the woman in charge of the ticket booth and the guest list, and I spoke to them for a few minutes. As I was speaking to them, Linus Torvalds, the creator of the Linux kernel, walked by. I had picked up a Microsoft plush toy at one of the booths, and as a joke, I turned to Linus and said, "Hey, you want to autograph my Microsoft toy?" He got a good laugh out of it, and as he grabbed his ticket, he said, "Nice job, young man. I will see you at the party." I turned back to the woman in charge of the ticket booth and was handed two tickets to an exclusive party inside FAO Schwartz. It wasn't until later in life that I began to analyze stories like this, after some started calling it the Hadnagy effect. As funny as that sounds, I began to see that much of what occurred to me wasn't luck or fate, but rather knowing how to be where I needed to be at the right time. That doesn't mean it didn't take hard work and a lot of help along the way. My muse in life is my wonderful wife. For almost 2 decades, you have supported me in all my ideas and efforts, and you are my best friend, my confidant, and my support pillar. Without you, I would not be where I am today. In addition, you have produced 2 of the most beautiful children on the planet. My son and my daughter are the motivation to keep doing all of this. If anything I do can make this place just a little more secure for them, or teach them how to keep themselves safe, it is all worthwhile. To my son and daughter, I cannot express enough gratitude for your support, love, and motivation. My hope is that my son and my little princess will not have to deal with the malicious, bad people out in this world, but I know just how unlikely that is. May this information keep you both just a little more secure. Paul, aka Rawjaw, thanks for all your support on the website. The thousands of hours you spent as the Wiki Master paid off, and now we have a beautiful resource for the world to use. I know I don't say it enough, but you're fired. Combined with the beautiful creation of Tom, aka DigIp, the website is a work of art. Carol, my editor at Wiley, worked her butt off to get this organized and following some semblance of a timeline. She did an amazing job putting together a great team of people and making this idea a reality. Thank you. Brian, I meant what I said. I'm going to miss you when this is over. As I worked with you over the last few months, I began to look forward to my editing sessions and the knowledge you would lay on me. Your honest and frank counsel and advice made this book better than it was. My gratitude goes out to Jim, aka Elwood, as well. Without you, a lot of what has happened on socialengineer.org, as well as inside this book, heck, in my life in the last couple of years, would not be a reality. Thank you for keeping me humble and in check. Your constant reality checks helped me stay focused and balance the many different roles I had to play. Thank you. Liz, about 12 years ago, you told me I should write a book. I'm sure you had something different in mind, but here it is. You have helped me through some pretty dark times. Thank you, and I love you. Maddie, my mentor, and my Echoti, where would I be without you? Maddie, you truly are my mentor and my brother. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for having the faith in me that I could write this book and launch www.socialengineer.org, and that both would be good. More than that, your constant counsel and direction have been translated on the pages of this book to make me more than I thought I could be. Your support with the Backtrack team, along with the support of the team at www.offensive-security.com, have transcended all I could have expected. Thank you for helping me balance and prioritize. My HOT, a special thanks to you for being the voice of reason and the light at the end of some frustrating days. With all my love, I thank you. Each person I mentioned here contributed to this book in some fashion. With their help, support, and love, this book has become a work that I am proud to have my name on. For the rest of you who have supported this site, the channel, and our research, thank you. As you read this book, I hope it affects you the way it has affected me. Albert Einstein once said, "Information is not knowledge." That is a powerful thought. Just reading this book will not somehow implant this knowledge into your being. Apply the principles, practice what is taught in these pages, and make the information a part of your daily life. When you do, you will then see this knowledge take effect. Christopher Hadnagy, October 2010. Chapter 1. A Look into the World of Social Engineering. If you know the enemy, and you know yourself, you need not fear the results of 100 battles. Sun Tzu. Social engineering, or SE, has been largely misunderstood, leading to many differing opinions on what social engineering is and how it works. This has led to a situation where some may view SE as simply lying to scam trivial free items such as pizza, or obtaining sexual gratification. Others think SE just refers to the tools used by criminals or con men, or perhaps that it is a science whose theories can be broken down into parts or equations and studied. Or perhaps it's a long-lost mystical art, giving practitioners the ability to use powerful mind tricks like a magician or illusionist. In whatever camp your flag flies, this book is for you. Social engineering is used every day by everyday people in everyday situations. A child trying to get her way in the candy aisle, or an employee looking for a raise, is using social engineering. Social engineering happens in government or small business marketing. Unfortunately, it is also present when criminals, con men, and the like trick people into giving away information that makes them vulnerable to crimes. Like any tool, social engineering is not good or evil, but simply a tool that has many different uses. Consider some of the following questions to drive that point home. Have you been tasked to make sure your company is as secure as possible? Are you a security enthusiast who reads every bit of the latest information out there? Are you a professional penetration tester who is hired to test the security of your clients? Are you a college student taking some form of IT specialization as your major? Are you presently a social engineer looking for new and improved ideas to utilize in your practice? Are you a consumer who fears the dangers of fraud and identity theft? Regardless of which one of those situations fits you, the information contained within this book will open your eyes to how you can use social engineering skills. You will also peer into the dark world of social engineering and learn how the bad guys use these skills to gain an upper hand. From there, you learn how to become less vulnerable to social engineering attacks. One warning up front. This book is not for the weak. It takes you into those dark corners of society where the black hats, the malicious hackers, live. It uncovers and delves into areas of social engineering that are employed by spies and con men. It reviews tactics and tools that seem like they are stolen from a James Bond movie. In addition, it covers common, everyday situations and then shows how they are complex social engineering scenarios. In the end, the book uncovers the insider tips and tricks of professional social engineers, and yes, even professional criminals. Some have asked why I would be willing to reveal this information. The answer is simple. The bad guys don't stop because of a contractual limitation or their own morals. They don't cease after one failed attempt. Malicious hackers don't go away because companies don't like their servers to be infiltrated. Instead, social engineering, employee deception, and internet fraud are used more and more each day. While software companies are learning how to strengthen their programs, hackers and malicious social engineers are turning to the weakest part of the infrastructure, the people. Their motivation is all about return on investment, or ROI. No self-respecting hacker is going to spend 100 hours to get the same results from a simple attack that takes 1 hour or less. The sad result in the end is that no way exists to be 100% secure, unless you unplug all electronic devices and move to the mountains. Because that isn't too practical, nor is it a lot of fun, this book discusses ways to become more aware and educated about the attacks out there, and then outlines methods that you can use to protect against them. My motto is security through education. Being educated is one of the only surefire ways to remain secure against the increasing threats of social engineering and identity theft. Kaspersky Labs, a leading provider of antivirus and protection software, estimated that more than 100,000 malware samples were spread through social networks in 2009. In a recent report, Kaspersky estimated that attacks against social networks are 10 times more successful than other types of attacks. The old hacker adage, knowledge is power, does apply here. The more knowledge and understanding one has of the dangers and threats of social engineering each consumer and business can have, and the more each attack scenario is dissected, the easier it will be to protect from, mitigate, and stop these attacks. That is where the power of all this knowledge will come in. Why this book is so valuable. Many books are available on the market on security, hacking, penetration testing, and even social engineering. Many of these books have very valuable information and tips to help their readers. Even with all the information available, a book was needed that takes social engineering information to the next level and describes these attacks in detail, explaining them from the malicious side of the fence. This book is not merely a collection of cool stories, neat hacks, or wild ideas. This book covers the world's first framework for social engineering. It analyzes and dissects the very foundation of what makes a good social engineer and gives practical advice on how to use these skills to enhance the listener's abilities to test the biggest weakness, the human infrastructure. This book offers a unique approach to social engineering. It is structured closely to the in-depth social engineering framework found at www.social-engineer.org/framework. This framework outlines the skills and the tools, physical, mental, and personality, a person should strive to possess to be an excellent social engineer. This book takes a tell-and-show approach by first presenting a principle behind a topic, then defining, explaining, and dissecting, then showing its application using collections of real stories or case studies. This is not merely a book about stories or neat tricks, but a handbook, a guide through the dark world of social engineering. Practical exercises appear throughout the book that are designed to help you master not only the social engineering framework, but also the skills to enhance your daily communications. These statements are especially true if you are a security specialist. As you listen to this book, I hope to impress upon you that security is not a part-time job and is not something to take lightly. As criminals and malicious social engineers seem to go from bad to worse in this world, attacks on business and personal lives seem to get more intense. Naturally, everyone wants to be protected, as evidenced by the increase in sales for personal protection software and devices. Although these items are important, the best protection is knowledge. Security through education. The only true way to reduce the effect of these attacks is to know that they exist, to know how they are done, and to understand the thinking process and mentality of the people who would do such things. When you possess this knowledge and you understand how malicious hackers think, a light bulb goes off. That proverbial light will shine upon the once darkened corners and enable you to clearly see the bad guys lurking there. When you can see the way these attacks are used ahead of time, you can prepare your companies and your personal affairs to ward them off. Of course, I am not contradicting what I said earlier. I believe there is no way to truly be 100% secure. Even top secret, highly guarded secrets can be and have been hacked in the simplest of manners. From a newspaper in Ottawa, Canada, this story is very interesting because some documents ended up in the wrong hands. These weren't just any documents, but top-secret defense documents that outlined things such as locations of security fences at the Canadian Forces Base in Trenton, the floor plan of the Canadian Joint Incident Response Unit, and more. How did this breach occur? The plans were thrown away in the trash can, and someone found them in the dumpster. A simple dumpster dive could have led to one of that country's largest security breaches. Simple, yet deadly attacks are launched every day and point to the fact that people need education, need to change the way they adhere to password policies, and the way they handle remote access to servers, and need to change the way they handle interviews, deliveries, and employees who are hired or fired. Yet without education, the motivation for change just isn't there. In 2003, the Computer Security Institute did a survey along with the FBI and found that 77% of the companies interviewed stated a disgruntled employee as the source of a major security breach. Vontu, The Data Loss Prevention section of Symantec says that 1 out of every 500 emails contains confidential information. Some of the highlights of that report are quoted as follows. 62% reported incidents at work that could put customer data at risk for identity theft. 66% say their coworkers, not hackers, pose the greatest risk to consumer privacy. Only 10% said hackers were the greatest risk. 46% say it would be easy to extremely easy for workers to remove sensitive data from the corporate database. 32%, about 1 in 3, are unaware of internal company policies to protect customer data. These are staggering and stomach-wrenching statistics. Later chapters discuss these numbers in more detail. The numbers show a serious flaw in the way security itself is handled. When there is education, hopefully before a breach, then people can make changes that can prevent unwanted loss, pain, and monetary damage. Sun Tzu said, "If you know the enemy and you know yourself, you need not fear the results of 100 battles. How true those words are. But knowing is just half the battle. Action on knowledge is what defines wisdom, not just knowledge alone. This book is most effective used as a handbook or guide through the world of social attacks, social manipulation, and social engineering." What's coming up? This book is designed to cover all aspects, tools, and skills used by professional and malicious social engineers. Each chapter delves deep into the science and art of a specific social engineering skill to show you how it can be used, enhanced, and perfected. The next section of this chapter, Overview of Social Engineering, defines social engineering and what roles it plays in society today, as well as the different types of social engineering attacks, including other areas of life where social engineering is used in a non-malicious way. I will also discuss how a social engineer can use the social engineering framework in planning an audit or enhancing his own skills. Chapter 2 is where the real meat of the lessons begins. Information gathering is the foundation of every social engineering audit. The social engineer's mantra is, "I am only as good as the information I gather." A social engineer can possess all the skills in the world, but if he or she doesn't know about the target, if the social engineer hasn't outlined every intimate detail, then the chance of failure is more likely to occur. Information gathering is the crux of every social engineering engagement, although people skills and the ability to think on your feet can help you get out of a sticky situation. More often than not, the more information you gather, the better your chances of success. The questions that I will answer in that chapter include the following. What sources can a social engineer use? What information is useful? How can a social engineer collect, gather, and organize this information? How technical should a social engineer get? How much information is enough? After the analyzation of information gathering, the next topic addressed in Chapter 2 is communication modeling. This topic closely ties in with the information gathering. First, I will discuss what communication modeling is and how it began as a practice. Then the chapter walks through the steps needed to develop and then use a proper communication model. It outlines how a social engineer uses this model against a target and the benefits in outlining it for every engagement. Chapter 3 covers elicitation, the next logical step in the framework. It offers a very in-depth look into how questions are used to gain information, passwords, in-depth knowledge of the target, and his or her company. You will learn what is good and proper elicitation and learn how important it is to have your elicitations planned out. Chapter 3 also covers the important topic of preloading the target's mind with information to make your questions more readily accepted. As you unravel this section, you will clearly see how important it is to become an excellent elicitor. You will also clearly see how you can use that skill not just in your security practices, but in daily life. Chapter 4, which covers pretexting, is powerful. This heavy topic is one of the critical points for many social engineers. Pretexting involves developing the role a social engineer will play for the attack on the company. Will the social engineer be a customer, vendor, tech support, new hire, or something equally realistic and believable? Pretexting involves not just coming up with the storyline, but also developing the way your persona would look, act, talk, walk, deciding what tools and knowledge they would have, and then mastering the entire package so when you approach the target, you are that person, and not simply playing a character. The questions covered include the following. What is pretexting? How do you develop a pretext? What are the principles of a successful pretext? How can a social engineer plan and then execute a perfect pretext? The next step in the framework is one that can fill volumes, yet it must be discussed from the viewpoint of a social engineer. Chapter 5 is a no-holds-barred discussion on some very confrontational topics, including that of IQs. For example, what are the varying opinions of some professionals about IQs, and how can a social engineer use them? The chapter also delves into the fascinating science of micro-expressions and its implications on social engineering. Chapter 5 goes on analyzing the research, yielding answers to these questions. Is it possible to use micro-expressions in the field of security? How would you do so? What benefit are micro-expressions? Can people train themselves to learn how to pick up on micro-expressions automatically? After we do the training, what information is obtained through micro-expressions? Probably one of the most debated topics in Chapter 5 is neuro-linguistic programming, or NLP. The debate has many people undecided on what it is and how it can be used. Chapter 5 presents a brief history of NLP, as well as what makes NLP such a controversy. You can decide for yourself whether NLP is usable in social engineering. Chapter 5 also discusses one of the most important aspects of social engineering in person or on the phone, knowing how to ask good questions, listen to responses, and then ask more questions. Interrogation and interviewing are two methods that law enforcement have used for years to manipulate criminals to confess as well as solve the hardest cases. This part of Chapter 5 puts to practical use the knowledge you gained in Chapter 3. In addition, Chapter 5 discusses how to build instant rapport, a skill you can use in everyday life. The chapter ends by covering my own personal research into the human buffer overflow, the notion that the human mind is much like the software that hackers exploit every day. By applying certain principles, a skilled social engineer can overflow the human mind and inject any command they want. Just like hackers write overflows to manipulate software to execute code, the human mind can be given certain instructions to, in essence, overflow the target and insert custom instructions. Chapter 5 is a mind-blowing lesson in how to use some simple techniques to master how people think. Many people have spent their lives researching and proving what can and does influence people. Influence is a powerful tool with many facets to it. To this end, Chapter 6 discusses the fundamentals of persuasion. The principles engaged in Chapter 6 will start you on the road toward becoming a master of persuasion. The chapter presents a brief discussion of the different types of persuasion that exist and provides examples to help solidify how you can use these facets in social engineering. The discussion doesn't stop there. Framing is also a hot topic nowadays. Many different opinions exist on how one can use framing, and this book shows some real-life examples of it. Then, dissecting each, I take you through the lessons learned and things you can do to practice reframing yourself, as well as use framing in everyday life as a social engineer. Another overwhelming theme in social engineering is manipulation. What is its purpose? What kinds of incentives drive manipulators? How can a person use it in social engineering? Chapter 6 presents all a social engineer needs to know on the topic of manipulation and how to successfully apply such skills. Chapter 7 covers the tools that can make a social engineering audit more successful, from physical tools such as hidden cameras to software-driven information gathering tools. Each section covers tested and tried tools for social engineers. Once you understand the social engineering framework, Chapter 8 discusses some real-life case studies. I have chosen two excellent accounts from the world-renowned social engineer Kevin Mitnick. I analyze, dissect, and then propose what you can learn from these examples and identify the methods he used from the social engineering framework. Moreover, I discuss what can be learned from his attack vectors, as well as how they can be used today. I discuss some personal accounts and dissect them as well. What social engineering guide would be complete without discussing some of the ways you can mitigate these attacks? The preceding overview is just a taste of what is to come. I truly hope you enjoy listening to this book as much as I've enjoyed writing it. Social engineering is a passion for me. I do believe there are certain traits, whether learned or inherent, that can make someone a great social engineer. I also subscribe to the belief that with enough time and energy, anyone can learn the different aspects of social engineering and then practice these skills to become a proficient social engineer. The principles in this book are not new. There is no mind-blowing technology that you will see that will change the face of security forever. There are no magic pills. As a matter of fact, the principles have been around for as long as people have. What this book does do is combine all of these skills in one location. It does give you clear direction on how to practice these skills, as well as examples of real-life situations where they are used. All of this information can help you gain a true sense of understanding the topics discussed here. The best place to start is with the basics by answering one fundamental question. What is social engineering? Overview of social engineering. What is social engineering? I once asked this question to a group of security enthusiasts, and I was shocked at the answers I received. Social engineering is lying to people to get information. Social engineering is being a good actor. Social engineering is knowing how to get stuff for free. Wikipedia defines it as the act of manipulating people into performing actions or divulging confidential information. While similar to a confidence trick or simple fraud, the term typically applies to trickery or deception for the purpose of information gathering, fraud, or computer system access. In most cases, the attacker never comes face to face with the victim. Although it has been given a bad name by the plethora of free pizza, free coffee, and how to pick up chicks sites, aspects of social engineering actually touch many parts of daily life. Webster's Dictionary defines social as of or pertaining to the life, welfare, and relations of human beings in a community. It also defines engineering as the art or science of making practical application of the knowledge of pure sciences, as physics or chemistry, as in the construction of engines, bridges, buildings, mines, ships, and chemical plants, or skillful or artful contrivance, maneuvering. Combining those two definitions, you can easily see that social engineering is the art, or better yet, science, of skillfully maneuvering human beings to take action in some aspect of their lives. This definition broadens the horizon of social engineers everywhere. Social engineering is used in everyday life, in the way children get their parents to give in to their demands. It is used in the way teachers interact with their students, in the way doctors, lawyers, or psychologists obtain information from their patients or clients. It is definitely used in law enforcement and in dating. It is truly used in every human interaction, from babies to politicians and everyone in between. I like to take that definition a step further and say that a true definition of social engineering is the act of manipulating a person to take an action that may or may not be in the target's best interest. This may include obtaining information, gaining access, or getting the target to take a certain action. For example, doctors, psychologists, and therapists often use elements I consider social engineering to manipulate their patients to take actions that are good for them, whereas a con man uses elements of social engineering to convince his targets to take actions that lead to loss for them. Even though the end game is much different, the approach may be very much the same. A psychologist may use a series of well-conceived questions to help a patient come to a conclusion that change is needed. Similarly, a con man will use well-crafted questions to move his target into a vulnerable position. Both of these examples are social engineering at its truest form, but have very different goals and results. Social engineering is not just about deceiving people or lying or acting a part. In a conversation I had with Chris Nickerson, a well-known social engineer from the TV series Tiger Team, he said, "True social engineering is not just believing you are playing a part, but for that moment you are that person. You are that role. It is what your life is." Social engineering is not just any one action, but a collection of the skills mentioned in the framework that, when put together, make up the action, the skill, and the science I call social engineering. In the same way, a wonderful meal is not just one ingredient, but is made up by the careful combining, mixing, and adding of many ingredients. This is how I imagine social engineering to be. And a good social engineer is like a master chef. Put in a little dab of elicitation, add a shake of manipulation, and a few heaping handfuls of pretexting, and bam, out comes a great meal of the perfect social engineer. Of course, this book discusses some of these facets, but the main focus is what you can learn from law enforcement, the politicians, the psychologists, and even children to better your abilities to audit and then secure yourself. Analyzing how a child can manipulate a parent so easily gives the social engineer insight into how the human mind works. Noticing how a psychologist phrases questions can help to see what puts people at ease. Noticing how a law enforcement agent performs a successful interrogation gives a clear path on how to obtain information from a target. Seeing how governments and politicians frame their messages for the greatest impact can show what works and what doesn't. Analyzing how an actor gets into a role can open your eyes to the amazing world of pretexting. By dissecting the research and work of some of the leading minds in microexpressions and persuasion, you can see how to use these techniques in social engineering. By reviewing some of the motivators of some of the world's greatest salespeople and persuasion experts, you can learn how to build rapport, put people at ease, and close deals. Then, by researching and analyzing the flip side of this coin, the con men, scam artists, and thieves, you can learn how all of these skills come together to influence people and move people in directions they thought they would never go. Mix this knowledge with the skills of lockpicks, spies who use hidden cameras, and professional information gatherers, and you have a talented social engineer. You do not use every one of these skills in each engagement, nor can you master every one of these skills. Instead, by understanding how these skills work and when to use them, anyone can master the science of social engineering. It is true that some people have a natural talent, like Kevin Mitnick, who could talk anyone into anything, it seemed. Frank Abagnale Jr. seemed to have the natural talents to con people into believing he was who he wanted them to believe he was. Victor Lustig did the unbelievable, actually convincing some people that he had the rights to sell the Eiffel Tower, topped only by his scam on Al Capone. These social engineers, and many more like them, seem to have natural talent, or a lack of fear that enables them to try things that most of us would never consider attempting. Unfortunately, in the world today, malicious hackers are continually improving their skills at manipulating people, and malicious social engineering attacks are increasing. Dark Reading posted an article at darkreading.com that cites that data breaches have reached between $1 and $53 million per breach. Citing research by the Ponemon Institute, Dark Reading states Ponemon found that web-borne attacks, malicious code, and malicious insiders are the most costly types of attacks, making up more than 90% of all cybercrime costs per organization per year. A web-based attack costs $143,209. Malicious code, $124,083. And malicious insiders, $100,300. Malicious insiders being listed on the top three suggests that businesses need to be more aware of the threats posted by malicious social engineering, even from employees. Many of these attacks could have been avoided if people were educated, because they could act on that education. Sometimes just finding out how malicious people think and act can be an eye-opener. As examples, on a much smaller and more personal scale, I was recently discussing with a close friend her financial accounts and how she was worried about being hacked or scammed. In the course of the conversation, we started to discuss how easy it is to guess people's passwords. I told her that many people use the same passwords for every account. I saw her face go white as she realized this is her. I told her that most people use simplistic passwords that combine things like their spouse's name, his or her birthday or anniversary date. I saw her go an even brighter shade of pale. I continued by saying that most of the time, people choose the simplest security question, such as your mother's maiden name, and how easy finding that information is via the internet or a few fake phone calls. Many people will list this information in Blippi, Twitter, or Facebook accounts. This particular friend didn't use social media sites too much. So I asked her that if she thought with a few phone calls she could picture herself giving over this information. Of course, she said no. To illustrate how easily people hand over personal information, I told her that I once saw a placemat in a restaurant that had a $50 off coupon for a local golf course, a very attractive offer. To take advantage of this offer, you only had to provide your name, date of birth, and street address, and provide a password for an account that would be set up and sent to your email address. Everyday websites are created to collect sensitive information. A phone call with a survey or some quick research on the internet can yield a birth date or anniversary date. And, armed with this information, I have enough to build a password attack list. Plus, a dozen sites offer detailed records of all sorts of personal information on an individual for a mere $9 to $30. Realizing how malicious social engineers think, how scammers react to information, and how con men will try anything can help people to be more aware of what is going on around them. A team of security enthusiasts and I have scoured the internet collecting stories that show many different aspects of social engineering. These stories can help answer a vital question. How is social engineering used in society over time? And see where social engineering's place is and how it is used maliciously. Social engineering and its place in society. As already discussed, social engineering can be used in many areas of life. But not all of these uses are malicious or bad. Many times, social engineering can be used to motivate a person to take an action that is good for them. How? Think about this. John needs to lose weight. He knows he is unhealthy and needs to do something about it. All of John's friends are overweight too. They even make jokes about the joys of being overweight and say things like, "I love not worrying about my figure." On one hand, This is an aspect of social engineering. It is social proof or consensus, where what you find or deem acceptable is determined by those around you. Because John's close associations view being overweight as acceptable, it is easier for John to accept it. However, if one of those friends lost weight and did not become judgmental but was motivated to help, the possibility exists that John's mental frame about his weight might change, and he might start to feel that losing weight is possible and good. This is, in essence, social engineering. So you can clearly see how social engineering fits into society and everyday life. The following sections present a few examples of social engineering, scams, and manipulation, and a review of how they work. The 419 scam. The 419 scam, better known as the Nigerian scam, has grown into an epidemic. Basically, an email comes to the target telling him he has been singled out for a very lucrative deal, and all he needs to do is offer a little bit of help. If the victim will help the letter sender extract a large sum of money from foreign banks, he can have a percentage. After the target is confident and signs on, a problem arises that causes the target to pay a fee. After the fee is paid, another problem comes up, along with another fee. Each problem is the last, with one final fee. And this can be stretched out over many months. The victim never sees any money and loses from $10,000 to $50,000 in the process. What makes this scam so amazing is that in the past, official documents, papers, letterhead, and even face-to-face meetings have been reported. Recently, a variation of this scam has popped up where victims are literally sent a real check. The scammers promise a huge sum of money and want in return only a small portion for their efforts. If the target will wire transfer a small sum, in comparison, of $10,000 when they receive the promised check, they can deposit the check and keep the difference. The problem is that the check that comes is a fraud, and when the victim goes to cash it, she is slapped with check fraud charges and fines. In some cases, after the victim has already wired money to the scammer. This scam is successful because it plays on the victim's greed. Who wouldn't give $10,000 to make $1 million or even $100,000? Most smart people would. When these people are presented with official documents, passports, receipts, and even official offices with government personnel, then their belief is set, and they will go to great lengths to complete the deal. Commitment and consistency play a part in this scam, as well as obligation. I discuss these attributes in greater detail in later chapters, and when I do, you will see why this scam is so powerful. The power of scarcity. Scarcity is when people are told something they need or want has limited availability, and to get it, they must comply with a certain attitude or action. Many times the desired behavior is not even spoken, but the way it is conveyed is by showing people who are acting properly getting rewards. The use of food to win elections in South Africa. When a group or person does not support the right leader, foodstuffs become scarce and jobs people once had are given to others who are more supportive. When people see this action, it doesn't take long to get them in line. This is a very malicious and hurtful form of social engineering, but nonetheless, one to learn from. It is often the case that people want what is scarce, and they will do anything if they are led to believe that certain actions will cause them to lose out on those items. What makes certain cases even worse, as in the earlier example, is that a government took something necessary to life and made it scarce, and available only to supporters. A malicious but very effective manipulation tactic. The Dalai Lama and social engineering. An interesting article details an attack made on the Dalai Lama in 2009. A Chinese hacker group wanted to access the servers and files on the network owned by the Dalai Lama. What methods were used in this successful attack? The attackers convinced the office staff at the Dalai Lama's office to download and open malicious software on their servers. This attack is interesting because it blends both technology hacking and social engineering. The article states, the software was attached to emails that purported to come from colleagues or contacts in the Tibetan movement. According to researcher Ross Anderson, a professor of security engineering at the University of Cambridge Computer Laboratory, cited by the Washington Times Monday. The software stole passwords and other information, which in turn gave the hackers access to the office's email system and documents stored on computers there. Manipulation was used, as well as common attack vectors, such as phishing, the practice of sending out emails with enticing messages and links or files that must be opened to receive more information. Often those links or files lead to malicious payloads. And exploitation. This attack can work and has worked against major corporations as well as governments. This example is just one in a large pool of examples where these vectors cause massive damage. Employee theft. The topic of employee theft could fill volumes, especially in the light of the following statistic. More than 60% of employees interviewed admitted to taking data of one sort or another from their employers. Many times this data is sold to competitors. Other times employee theft is in time or other resources. In some cases, a disgruntled employee can cause major damage. I once talked to a client about employee discharge policies, things like disabling key cards, disconnecting network accounts, and escorting discharged employees out of the building. The company felt that everyone was part of the family, and that those policies wouldn't apply. Unfortunately, the time came to let go of Jim, one of the higher-ranking people in the company. The firing went well, it was amicable, and Jim said he understood. The one thing the company did right was to handle the firing around closing time to avoid embarrassment and distraction. Hands were shook, and then Jim asked the fateful question, "Can I take an hour to clean out my desk and take some personal pictures off my computer? I will turn my key card into the security guard before I leave." Feeling good about the meeting, they all quickly agreed and left with smiles and a few laughs. Then Jim went to his office, packed a box of all his personal items, took the pictures and other data off his computer, connected to the network, and wiped clean 11 servers worth of data. Accounting records, payroll, invoices, orders, history, graphics, and much more just deleted in a matter of minutes. Jim turned in his key card as he promised, and calmly left the building with no proof that he was the one to initiate these attacks. The next morning, a call came in to me from the owner describing the carnage in the ex-employee's wake. Hoping for a silver bullet, the client had no choice but to try to recover what could be recovered forensically and start over from the backups, which were more than 2 months old. A disgruntled employee who is left unchecked can be more devastating than a team of determined and skilled hackers, to the tune of $15 billion. That is what the loss is estimated at being to businesses in the U.S. alone due to employee theft. These stories may leave a question about what different categories of social engineers are out there, and whether they can be classified. Dark Market and Master Splinter. In 2009, a story broke about an underground group called Dark Market, the so-called eBay for criminals, a very tight group that traded stolen credit card numbers and identity theft tools, as well as the items needed to make fake credentials and more. An FBI agent by the name of J. Keith Malarski went under deep cover and infiltrated the Dark Market site. After a while, Agent Malarski was made an administrator of the site. Despite many trying to discredit him, he hung in for more than 3 years as the admin of the site. During this time, Malarski had to live as a malicious hacker, speak and act as one, and think as one. His pretext was one of a malicious spammer, and he was knowledgeable enough to pull it off. His pretext and his social engineering skills paid off because Agent Malarski infiltrated Dark Market as the infamous Master Splinter. And after